evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is July 2nd, 2015. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Hold that date. We're having a lunch for subscribers in Austin, Texas. And interestingly enough, folks are coming in from Illinois. Some folks in Pennsylvania are going to be in Texas for a wedding. So it looks like we're going to have another one of those great lunches where people come from all over. It's going to be Saturday, August 22nd at Jasper's. I've just approved the menu. We'll have a blog post up on it by this weekend. So if you're in the area or you want to fly in, it's going to be a great lunch. We'll go 12 to 4. I hope you can join us. Our theme tonight is Greece and Puerto Rico Ring the Bell. And there's a subscriber-only commentary with that name up on the blog. You need to log in to see it. So I would encourage you to take a look at it. We're watching the government equivalent of the movie Other People's Money, where both sides are right and both sides are wrong. And both sides helped get us in this mess. And there is a third way out that works. But needless to say, this week, Greece and Puerto Rico rang the bell. Greece defaulted on their IMF payment. It depends on what comes up, but they have treasury bonds or treasury bills and other payments to make that will default subsequently. And then Puerto Rico's governor stated that they cannot pay their municipal bond debts. Everybody knows that, but now it's semi-official. And these two things are part of the real economy calling for an end to economies governed by financial speculation. We have spent many years, many decades now, strip mining the economy to generate strong returns on financial assets. And I posted some of the outrageous deals that have been used to strip the Greek economy. And no doubt, it's one of the reasons that there's a great deal of the Greek economy that's offshore or hidden, and of course not reporting to the tax side. And you can see why the alienation is very great. But if we're going to rebuild the economy, we've reached a point where all the money that's been stolen, it's sitting around in tax havens, it's sitting in the pocket of oligarchs, even that can't make a decent return if the real economy doesn't function. And the real economy can't function if everything is a strip mine and a speculation. Now, of course, we could go to war and continue to steal from each other. So as one person I know says, you know, everybody's trying to steal somebody else's pie. Nobody's trying to bake it. So if we don't want to bake pies, but we just want to steal them from each other, we can go to war. But that just means we're going to continue to sink in response to systemic lawlessness. And that means we're all going to have to change. So the Greek people are going to have to change. Part of this is that Asia is rising, globalization is upon us, and new technology is integrating. Now, as those of you who've listened to me for many years, I would never have unleashed globalization in this way. But now that it's been unleashed, and now that new technology is coming in, the reality is we're going to have to adjust, and that means we're going to have to re-engineer everything. And it's, you know, but as part of that, if you need anything, you need good leadership. And part of the problem is the leadership that you have running things when you want to steal everything is very different than the leadership that you have when things need to really work. The reality is there's a huge, you know, there are two tsunamis headed each other. The first tsunami is the one that Greece and Puerto Rico has now contributed to by saying, you know, we have to do what makes sense in the real economy. We have to grow the real economy. If we want to eat, we have to grow the food. We can't just trade it in trading sardines. This is the real economy screaming about reality, and that reality has to be heard. You have to create wealth. You can't just steal it. And that's on a collision course with the hubris of a lot of the current leadership. If you look at the people running for president and the sort of Bush-Clinton dynasty, they're headed in a very opposite direction. They're not headed in the direction of taking care of the work that needs to be done. So There's a great comment in my interview with Wilkerson where Colonel Wilkerson, where he was talking about the importance of fixing the infrastructure. And when I asked him if any of these issues would get teed up in the election, he said, no, these candidates are just, you know, focused on what they can, whatever power they can get for themselves. And I think that's the case. So real people want to get things done. There's an urgent need for investment in mission critical security and infrastructure. Next week in the wrap up, I'm going to talk, our theme is the infrastructure. It's going to be very interesting. But the reality is we can't afford racketeering global foundations, obscene financial speculations, and bankers and contractors who pad their bills in numbers. And it's really time for the elite waste and adult fairy tales to get on the chopping block, along with the rest of us having to get ready to sort of deal with the changes that are upon us. Anyway, facing this issue is an improvement. And so my attitude is what happened with Greece and Puerto Rico is good, because now we can start dealing with the facts, we can start dealing with reality, we can start listening to the real economy, and we can move forward. One of the interesting notes about what's been going on in Greece is as a media event, interestingly enough, I'm getting all my news on Greece from the Twitter feed from Tsipras, the who's leading the negotiations as prime minister. And it's amazing if you just read his tweets and his RSS feed, you get a very different picture about what's going on than people say, if you read the media coverage of what they say he's saying or doing, and you just read what he's saying or doing. They're two very different stories. It's fascinating. I posted one article about how Tsipras and his finance minister, quote, have turned the Greek tragedy into Twitter triumph. It's pretty funny. The other thing is we made a donation to an Indiegogo Greek bailout fund. They've raised 1.6 million euros from 91,000 people in 5 days, sort of the just do it method of helping the Greek people. That's an awful lot of trust to put in a complete stranger's come up with quite a clever idea, but you can check it out. I posted it on the blog. Okay, money and markets. Top of the blog until 1 day ago was our apology. We apologize for our site going down as many times as it has. You wouldn't believe the hack attacks we're taking. Somebody really doesn't want us up. Now, we've been dealing with hack attacks all along, ever since our creation, and they've gotten particularly fierce after January. But from the time we put the Pope Francis commentary up, bam, you know, it's just been war. We're in the process of bringing up a new website. You've heard me say that many times. We hope to have it launched in July. We're just down to the last 7%, which is always the most tricky. What was very interesting was at some point we were dealing with so many problems. I republished the article at Scoop Media New Zealand, and I sent that link to Jeff Rentz, who generates an enormous amount of hits. And I said, Jeff, would you put this up on your website? Because we're getting hacked and I want to make sure this gets around. He put it up. Bam! Scoop goes down for a while. And I've never seen Scoop go down before that I can remember. So finally, we got frustrated and sent it around by email and posted on our website that we thought this was the cause of the hack attacks. Well, all of a sudden, people start emailing it all over the place, and suddenly the hack attacks stop. So, I shouldn't say stop. They calm down much more. I think somebody said, wait a minute, you're making it worse. You're helping them get the story published. So, take a look at the commentary, and particularly if you're involved or active in the Catholic Church. There's some great ideas. We're thinking of converting it into a prayer. So we'll keep you posted on what we do, because we want to keep that alive. There's some great ideas about what people in the church can do to integrate Pope Francis's, what he says he's for, into actual reality when it comes to money and resources within the church, which would be a great thing. It would be a real way of shifting things in a positive direction. This week, major leak into WikiLeaks of the Trade and Services Agreement, a draft of the core pieces. This is the second part of the three pieces to come with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Agreement, the Trades and Services Agreement is that third part. And of course, the expectation is these are the three pieces that will fly through the fast track. It's pretty amazing, pretty gruesome. We're working on a special report, so we'll have more for you. It's very important to look at all three of them together, the Trade and Services Agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and Transatlantic Agreement. After we get the Trade and Services Agreement done, we'll turn to the Transatlantic Agreement. TPP being the G7 plus allies in the Asia area and the Pacific area, and then the Transatlantic being on the Atlantic side of the ocean, so U.S. and Europe. Obama's big win, the most debased politics I've ever seen in my life, was Obama speaking at the Charleston Church between Obama's efforts with the Black Church and the Black churches and the Supreme Court decisions on Obamacare and on gay marriage. You literally see the Obama and the courts wrap fascism in the guise of being good and progressive and doing the right thing by Blacks and gays while intentionally destroying theirs and everyone else's rights and sort of economic future. It was an astonishing political performance, and it made me realize how grateful I am to be as far away from the center of the empire as I am. The juicing of the housing market continues. As I've talked about several times on the Solari Report, the administration is making a major effort to sort of re-energize the housing market and trying to figure out ways they can make it easy for young people, first-time home buyers, to get in the housing market. So keep an eye on that. Again, if you're in an area where the housing market is strong, I don't want to see you get shut out, because I think that's going to continue through the election, despite all the problems in the economy. I'm not going to run through the charts today in Money and Markets because we did that in the second quarter equity overview. So there's a great bunch of charts and audio commentary on the second quarter, and I would take a look at that. Look for spreads to widen now that we're starting to see sovereign governments turn and say, we can't afford to pay the bonds. They're never going to get paid. We're going to start to see real spreads in quality, between quality and lower quality credit. We're going to also, because of rising interest rates, we're going to see spreads on maturities. And those spreads and that integration of fact and reality into the bond market ultimately is going to be good. Yes, it's going to cause pain. There's going to be problems. But here's the reality. You and I are much better if prices are honest. This game of kick the can with the debt has created an Orwellian situation where prices have no bearing on reality. I wanted to tell you a story, and forgive me, I'm going to have to use a four-letter word, but I was on the board of a financial institution in the early 90s after we were cleaning up the housing market, and you saw many portfolio and financial institution mortgage portfolios have to be marked way down. And I was sitting in the office of the chairman, who had had a very successful career in capital markets on Wall Street before taking over this institution. And one of his finance guys came running in and explained that the feds were about to take down this other financial institution in the area. And they were prepared to sell the loan portfolio for a very aggressive price. And the chairman looked at his finance guy and he said, I don't want that portfolio. That portfolio is shit. And the finance guy looked at me and he said, look, at 20 cents on the dollar, that's good shit. And suddenly the chairman's face changed and he said, oh, you're right. It is. And that's the sound when you can mark a market to market, when you can mark the prices to reality, to fact, suddenly markets can move. People can move forward. people can transact. People can start to make deals to get to a better place and start to optimize reality as opposed to kicking the can down in some Orwellian state, which is to say that moving from the frozen tundra of Orwellian kick the can into reality and mark to market, that's a good thing. It's an improvement. I used to have a deputy at HUD who would say, in the destruction of the old, let there be the creation of the new. Well, there's a lot of what I call financial fear porn, and I'm getting pretty disgusted with it, of people talking about how this is the end of the world, everything's going to collapse. No, it's not. Everything's changing, and it's going to keep changing, and the change is going to get radical. But if enough people can say, okay, what's the real price? Okay, let's get in there and let's start transacting and doing deals to get things moving again. We're going to get to a better place. So I, for one, I'm sick of kick the can. I'm sick of Orwell. I want to get to honest prices. And every step in that direction, as far as I'm concerned, is good. And the dialogue that's going on about what in the world do you do in Greece as opposed to just stripping the place again, so that oligarchs can go in there and pick up the equity cheap. To me, that's a good conversation. So let the games drag on here. Our hero this week is tech startup MX3D and designer Joris Lehrman. They have designed a 3D robots that build bridges across the Amsterdam Canal. We've put their website on the blog, and we have also put an article about the, it shows a picture, and tomorrow we'll put the video of the robots building the bridges. It's quite amazing to watch, and it shows you the amazing things that are coming. We're going from a world where it's not just software that's sexy, now it's hardware that's sexy. So very exciting little story of that's an example of thousands of things that are underway. One of the reasons you want capital to move freely and prices to be accurate, because capital is going to start flowing to people like this. And if you look at all their supporters they're getting from the equipment manufacturers, what you see is capital absolutely is flowing to very, very great talent. Okay, ask Catherine. We've got a lot of questions. One was about the death on the treadmill of Vice Chairman Jimmy Lee, 62 years old. And someone wrote and said, long story about, you know, can this really possibly be true? I don't know if the death was natural or unnatural. It could be either. Both is a perfectly reasonable scenario, given what's been going on, particularly with the bankers' deaths. The chilling thing I saw was it was only a month or two ago that Sheryl Sandberg's husband, who was 48, had a heart attack and died on a treadmill. I think he was in Lake Tahoe. Not directly in San Francisco area where they live. And in the article about Jimmy Lee's death, they quoted Sheryl Sandberg as talking about how supportive he had been of Facebook. And the fact that her husband had just died in the same manner seemed a little, it almost seemed like a signal, and it truly made you wonder. So I think the reality is we don't know, but a lot of bankers are dying in highly unnatural circumstances, and I think the assassinations have been significant, and it's all part of the cleanup of, the banks serving as conduits to shift all the money, and now that that's over, they're being re-engineered and consolidated, and the trail is being, you know, the knowledge management. Sometimes to delete the database, you have to delete people. Hi, Catherine. I'm wondering what countries do you consider to have the safest banking systems in the world? Switzerland, in my opinion, has the safest banking system in the world, despite the U.S. efforts to destabilize it. The U.S. efforts have made it very difficult, if not impossible, for U.S. citizens to open new bank accounts. There are ways to do it. They take time and are expensive. it is relatively easy to open investment accounts with Swiss money managers who are SEC registered. So you can certainly get money in Switzerland, but you know, it's a complex thing, and the U.S. has made it much more difficult. I read your precious metals report. Great. So what do we do with our IRAs? I, for one, am heavy into GLD and SGOL. That's the ETFs, gold ETFs. Not sure which report you read. I think you may be referring to what percentage of my assets should I hold in gold and silver. I wrote that about 2 years ago. Essentially what it says is, look, you want to focus on getting your core positions in physical for gold and silver. You need to have physical control of those positions. Anything you do in your IRA are investment positions, so you might as well. You know, I think as an investment vehicle, GLD and SGOL suffice. They're not the best ones, but they suffice if you're going to have an investment position. The right question right now is, given the charts, given where gold and silver are performing, is that where you want to have your money? You're talking about putting something that doesn't generate a yield and is known to do very poorly when interest rates rise, and I think they're going to rise if only a little bit this year. So that's an investment strategy as to how much money you want in precious metals as an investment position. A different question than your core. Your core position you want to hold outside of an IRA, and you want physical control. Another person said, if a portfolio has 20% goldmoney.com, and this seems to be too big a portion, what is the best way to take money from that position? If the position is in gold and you want to stay in gold, then take delivery of the gold. It's much cheaper and easier to take delivery of gold than silver. If you don't want to stay in gold, then just sell it and wire the money to the bank account listed on the Gold Money account. If it's in silver, it's very expensive to take delivery. You would have to do it through a depository. Unbelievably expensive to ship it to the United States. If you can establish an account in the jurisdiction in which Gold Money holds your silver, it may be easier to do that. I'm hoping you have it in Hong Kong so there's no VAT tax. Make sure you figure out what the VAT tax, if Gold Money's going to assert you need a VAT tax if you're pulling it from Switzerland or London. And I think to switch it to Hong Kong would probably be prohibitively expensive. You'd have to work it out with them. I suggest if you do want to pull silver, you call Jim Mitchell at Gold Money and walk through your options in detail. One of the things you can do if you're in silver is swap it to gold, but obviously that's a taxable transaction, and then have them deliver gold. Again, if you just think you have too much in precious metals, then you just sell. So those are the options. And of course, a lot of it depends on what your tax basis is and whether you're willing to have a taxable transaction or not. If you don't want a taxable transaction, then you're going to have to take delivery of the metal that you hold. And again, as I said, particularly if that's silver, it can be prohibitively expensive. A long question about gold stores from someone whose basic framework of the world is not aligned with mine, but I'll try and pick apart particular pieces. It's very important to remember when you look at a lot of highly certain descriptions of the world by the financial fear porn crowd. We live, as Dr. Joseph Farrell says, in a 28-track world. He pointed out that Bach composed in 28 tracks, and Americans keep trying to describe everything in 1, 2, and 3 tracks, and it doesn't work that way. So you're getting a framework of the world that is 3-track instead of 28-track, and you want to be careful to do that. It's very appealing to do that, because it's a way of avoiding dealing with the fact that there is so much uncertainty and our knowledge is very limited of what's really going on. But when you don't begin to have the knowledge you need to see all 28 tracks, what you need to make sure to do is to live with the uncertainty and not to grossly oversimplify, just so you can get a clear but incorrect picture. So that one of the questions is, why is the gold's why is gold shifting and precious metals shifting to the east? First of all, what you're watching is the diversification of the gold inventory on planet Earth. And that's because we're rebalancing the global economy. And if you're going to create a digital currency, then you need the gold holdings rebalanced. And that's just a infrastructure thing. Part of the reason I think Mr. Global wants to diversify the gold holdings is safety. As they grow in value, it becomes much more dangerous to keep them in one or a few places. And so there's a real imperative to diversify the gold and rebalance it so that as you shift the currencies, you know, things are much more in balance. You want to be very careful to talk about the inventory of the gold. I've tried on numerous occasions to try and figure out how much gold there is on this planet, and I have no idea. And one of the reasons I have no idea is I don't know if there is a trade between us and civilizations off planet, if they exist, which they might. I think we don't know for a fact that the entire inventory mined on the planet is here. And we don't know what the story is between the relationship. You know, we don't know. I don't know for a fact that other civilizations exist, but if they do, I'm sure we're trading gold with them. So I think this is a possibly a multi-planetary issue, and we don't know the truth of that, and we don't know the truth of the inventory. So I would be very careful to jump to conclusions because, there are people who talk about the inventory like it's only on the planet and it's known and it's static. I just don't think that's true. Also, a question about the TPP implying that it's friendly to China. It's not friendly to China. In fact, the rush on the TPP is very hostile to China and potentially very threatening to China. We're organizing everybody around China to be in our trade group, not in China. So I would be very careful. And then finally, the question, why did no one in America do anything to try and stop the TPP, which is odd because I certainly had on the Solari Report Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, who's done a great deal to stop this trade agreement, and many others. There are many courageous people, not just Americans, but global citizens screaming no. So I guess you just listen to Fox News. I don't know what to say. But we certainly are not going to stop these things by invalidating the people who are trying to stop them. The other thing is that tactics that you use when you're not dealing with invasive electronic surveillance and control are very different than tactics when you are. I would encourage the person who wrote this to listen to the Hagman interview about Jade Helm on the blog, but there's a lot going on that you can't see because there are a lot of people sneaking around because they're being smart. Dear Catherine, recently you gave a warning that gold money may not be a safe depository for precious metal holdings, which leads me to ask where one would go. I have withdrawn my recommendation of gold money. They've sold the company to Bitgold, which is a Canadian company. Bitgold says they're going to be changing their name to gold money, but essentially they're pulling a lot of the capital out of the subsidiary gold money. Bitgold has capital, but it will remain in the holding company. As far as I know, not going down into the subsidiary company, so you have something with far less capital and change in governance to a different crew who is new to me. I've spoken with the head of Bitgold, seemed like a very talented, intelligent person. How that translates into being a good steward of a depository in this kind of environment is a whole different issue because you're dealing with forces and risks that a young person may not be entirely aware of. So part of this, it has nothing to do with the Bitgold deal. It has to do with the fact that all around the world, we're watching more and more effort to squeeze into inventories that have been traditionally available to retail investors, and I've talked about the the hostel offer for Central Gold Trust, which is really one of the finest funds available to publicly which is publicly traded and available to retail investors. So it's a perfect example of sort of the move in on the last remaining sort of high integrity portfolios. And what that says to me, it's really time to make sure for your core position that you absolutely have physical control either on your own or in a depository you can trust. So someone said, what are the safe publicly available depositories? Let me give you some suggestions. Das Safe is a vault in Vienna. You can go get a box. I believe you can still simply take a key or give them your number, and you won't have to file an FBAR because this is something that will be under your control, not theirs. Just make sure you give a key or somebody else knows to get the key and get it if you should be in a car wreck. So Das Safe in Vienna. Bullion Management in Canada is a very well-respected depository, expensive, very well-respected. Perth Mint in Australia, there's a whole series of American dealers who can get you into Perth Mint. Perth Mint is run by one of the state governments in Australia and has a lot of protection because of that. ABC Bullion, a leading precious metals dealer, will have the economist from ABC Bullion on the Solari report 2 weeks from now. CNT up in Massachusetts, it's one that Franklin Sanders works with a lot and recommends, is a depository there. Delaware Depository in Delaware is another one that is accessible to retail investors. They have a retail marketing arm that you can use to access them. Of course, there are many Swiss banks, particularly the Canton banks, if you are lucky enough to be able to get an account. There are many investment accounts. Some of the SEC investment advisors can go buy gold bullion for you. Finally, Security Center in New Orleans is a depository. You can get your own vault. Many of these places have a variety of options and for you. And so obviously sort of different ways of doing it, different slices. For many of you, if it's a core position, you want to hold it close to you. Some of these are a second option if you want to hold some of your physical in another jurisdiction. Anyway, so Das Safe, Bullion Management, Perth Mint, ABC Bullion. We'll be talking with ABC Bullion more about their vault option and how you can use an accounting firm to put your gold in your own vault and not depend on ABC Bullion. CNT, Delaware Depository, a variety of Swiss banks, and then Security Center, New Orleans. Anyway, so I think there are a lot of options available. Okay, another question about the major correction in the stock markets. Look, a major correction would be really healthy. The market is so many years overdue for a 10 to 25% correction. You can't have, you know, perpetually rising equity markets. It's not healthy. It's Orwellian. It causes terrible misallocations of equity capital. We need a consolidation. And if we get one, you'll have a lot of opportunity to buy things that you really want at a good price. So please don't get afraid about a 10 to 25% correction. Markets go up and down. It's the way of the world. And we need healthier markets. What is your philosophy on trailing stop losses for individual stocks owned in one's portfolio? Will you please discuss the pros and cons of this approach to limiting losses for your subscribers if you've already done? Okay. There are many pros and cons. Stops and trailing stops sound wonderful until you use them. And then you've got a couple of problems. One is gapping prices. So if I have a stop in, the price gaps down all of a sudden dramatically, then I get stopped out, not at the price I wanted, but at a price much lower. The second thing is whipsaw, because, you know, stops bunch up and they get played. So the price drops down, everybody gets stopped out, somebody else picks it up cheap, boom, it bounces up again, and you've been played by a manipulated market. That's pretty uncomfortable. The other thing is, if you do a lot with stops, life can get pretty complicated. And I think complexity is really the enemy of intelligent investment strategy in this environment. So, but there's no doubt when you, there are situations where you have significant gains, and if you can't be watching it all the time, then it pays to have a stop. So I think I like stops and moderations. I like trailing stops if you can do them. But I I confess, the the more I've used them, the less often I use them. So, in fact, I don't think I've ever used a stop on my own portfolio. I tend to like to keep things personally very simple. And what I will do is I will buy things that I'm prepared to live through the correction with. And if I'm not prepared to live through the correction, then if I come into the summer or come into a time that I feel, a correction is likely, I manage it all through my allocations. I say how much, what percentage do I want to have in equities? What percent do I want to have in cash? And I just cut before I go into the correction, hopefully, or as we go in. So I'm judicious with stops, but that's me. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to recommend to you Red Dog. We were talking about Australia, New Zealand, and the equity markets, so back to down under. But the other reason is, the last 2 weeks have had a lot of change, a lot of bad news, a lot of frustration for hardworking people who get up every morning and try and make things go. And sometimes it just pays to have a good schmaltzy cry. And spend some time, if only in fiction, with some people you just love. And I love dogs. Red Dog is a very famous Australian movie. It's the story of a dog who's half healer. I live in a community where everybody gets a blue or red healer. We love healers. But it's the dog is half red healer. And it gives you a great feel for the commodities-driven side of Australia and the spirit of Australia. And it's a fun movie. It's an interesting movie, and it'll make you feel great. So you'll spend some time with some people who are not up to any Orwellian tricks, and you'll spend some time in the company in fiction of a great dog. It's based on a true story. So if you feel like having a good schmaltzy cry, get Red Dog, and you'll love it. Our interview this week is just Catherine talking about the equity markets. I cover the second quarter performance. The air went out of the balloon. The first quarter was great everywhere but the United States, and then it came down. So Germany and China were both up over 25% in the first quarter, and then they're back down to about up 11 or 12%. But all the international markets did relatively well. I also took some time to really take a little bit of a look at Australia and New Zealand, because their markets I'm very interested personally in buying into, but the opportunity is not yet, but I'm keeping an eye on them, because particularly as the commodities, if commodities ever turn, or when they turn, everything ultimately turns. But if commodities turn, I just think there's some real opportunities there. Finally, I've been getting more and more questions about portfolio risk and different risk issues related to equities portfolios. So I thought it would really help our conversation if I just did a quick summary overview. And what I did was I wrote it up as a commentary, and it's linked from the equity overview blog post. And we did a separate audio to just go over those issues. I think it's extremely important in a period like this to break down the different kinds of risks in a portfolio and deal with how to address them one by one. What I find a lot of times with people who come in and do consultations with me is that there's a great deal of effort to scare people on what's going on in the environment and how they should deal with it. And the risks get sort of combined and blurred in a way that is a bit incoherent and really gets people in a space where they don't know how to take action to understand and address their risk. So I'm hoping that this will contribute to an ongoing conversation we're having about what the risks are and how to address them. That's it for July 2nd, 2015. Coming up next week, our second quarter wrap-up. The topic is infrastructure. It's one of the most fascinating pieces of research and analysis that the Solaria team has ever done, so I'm really looking forward to this. This one is going to be particularly good, and it fits right in on top of what we said in Planet Equity and Planet Debt. It's sort of the next logical step, so I can't wait to share that with you. We'll have a web presentation as we always do. And so second quarter wrap-up, we'll also take a look at the top stories. Then July 16th, the following week, Jordan Alessio from ABC Bullion, he's their chief economist. Remarkable person, because he's had very significant experience on the security side and as an investment advisor managing money and in those kinds of operations. And so he integrates those worlds and looks at precious metals as part of integrated portfolio strategy, which is the way that I do. So he bridges the worlds, and very interesting. He'll be coming in to us from Sydney, and I look forward to that. And then, saving the best for last, July 23rd, we're going to be talking with former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney about what's really going on and what the real issues in the election are. So that's going to be fascinating. So until next week, with the second quarter wrap-up, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.